Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
All right, 710 ESPN, what are you guys doing? It is a rainy Thursday, maybe not the day to go out for a walk. Stuck in the house, hearing from more and more people that are listening to the show every day, giving you a little sense of normalcy. You guys doing this job and being here is helping us get through it. And a lot of people are listening to it now on their smart speakers, which I learned. That's how I listen to Sliwa at night. I say, "Hey, Alexa, put on Alan Sliwa on 710 ESPN," and up pops Alan Sliwa. And I get some Sliwa at sunset. And I'm telling you, Curtis Poindexter is trying to take over that show.
That doesn't sound like Curtis. I'm surprised at that.
Oh, Curtis. He's a schemer. Curtis is a schemer. That's the one thing he doesn't get credit for. He's a big schemer.
What do you think of this NBA horse tournament that they announced today? You think that's going to work?
Here's the thing. At this point, I'll watch it. I'm looking for anything that provides some diversion. The field is interesting.
Yeah. Now you got the pull up the field.
And yeah.
Let me say this: that if they do, they're going to do this. They announced it today. They should get some really colorful people to broadcast it, because like when they did it before, they put microphones on. The one I saw was Rajon Rondo against Kevin Durant, and both Rajon and Kevin didn't say much.
Right.
So it didn't have any. It didn't pop. But let's say, what if you had a color commentary team of Kevin Hart, Samuel L. Jackson, and Charles Barkley?
Yeah.
See, that would work. That's what they should do.
Yeah, I think that's Mike Breen, J.B. Smoove, and Charles Barkley.
Yeah, perfect. Or Ernie Johnson.
Or Ernie Johnson, yeah. So here's the field, and I've actually got the odds.
Okay.
Trae Young is the favorite at 2-1. And, you know, he's just going to be bombing. Chris Paul is the second pick at 5-2. Mike Conley Jr. is next at 3-1. Paul Pierce, coming out of retirement to play in this horse tournament, 4-1. Zach LaVine from the Bulls is 5-1. Chauncey Billups, another one, coming out of retirement, 6-1. Ali Quigley from the WNBA is 8-1. And Tamika Catchings is the long shot at 10-1. So that is your field. Trae Young, Chris Paul, Mike Conley Jr., Paul Pierce, Zach LaVine, Chauncey Billups, Ali Quigley, and Tamika Catchings.
Give me, what do I get on Zach LaVine?
Zach LaVine, 5-1.
Yeah, give me him. Number one, he's a UCLA guy.
Yep.
He would have played more at UCLA. He only played 1 year at UCLA. And Bryce Alford was on that team when Steve was the coach. His dad, Steve, was the coach. So Zach didn't play as much as he would have, but he's a sleepy good player. He's never played on a really good team, but he's got a whole bunch of trick shots. He jumps out of the gym. I know he can't dunk. You're going to have to outlaw dunks in a horse game.
He can score. He's got a defense allergy, but he can score.
So I think that he's the... What is he, the third favorite?
He's the fifth favorite.
Yeah, that's good value there. Zach LaVine can play a little bit.
Wouldn't it be something if Ali Quigley or Tamika Catchings won?
It'd be great for the sport.
Oh, it'd be great for the sport. I hope one of those two goes really deep. And then
it's too
Paul
bad
Pierce
they couldn't.
And Chauncey Billups coming out of retirement.
I think there's clearly somebody in the NBA who would have been the favorite that they didn't get. Do you agree that there's an obvious, overwhelming number one favorite if they could have got him? You know who I'm thinking of?
Well, I mean, somebody who can bomb, I think, is an advantage. Maybe somebody like Steph.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Steph. You know, and Steph strikes me as somebody who could, you know, off the floor, off the backboard, off the support, you know.
Plus those deep threes. Deep threes are going to carry the day.
Well, Trae Young can make those. Trae Young can make really long threes.
Yeah.
So that may be why they've favored Trae, is that he has range that's ridiculous.
So, yeah, I'll give it a shot. Hell, I mean, some of this stuff has not worked for me, like WrestleMania I didn't watch. Oh, by the way, they canceled that UFC fight that Dana White was stubbornly trying to have.
Yeah, finally, he wanted to get his own island.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, Lindsay, give me $2,000 in mythical money on Zach LaVine. What would I get, Mace? 5-1?
5-1.
All right, so I get $10,000 if he wins it.
Okay, Lindsay, you got it.
Lindsay, do you have the mythical money updates?
Yes, I can get that for you right now. I can give it to you right when we're done talking to Rob Pelinka.
Okay, good.
Okay,
good.
So we'll update that, and we're gonna in a minute here. We're gonna talk to Lakers general manager Rob Pelinka, who I think, and I'm not just saying this because I work for the Lakers, I think is the NBA executive of the year.
Me too.
I don't know if they're gonna give that award out because this season has been shortened. But if they did, I think for everything Rob's been able to put together and the adversity that he's led everybody through. And now, joining us on the program, is the Lakers general manager, Rob Pelinka. Rob, how are you holding up?
Guys, I'm as good as all of us can be in these times, man. Definitely thinking of you both and your families and our Lakers fans, too. I get up every morning saying a lot of prayers for everyone's health and safety.
What's your life like on a day-to-day basis now, Rob?
You know, probably similar to everybody that's listening and you guys. Listen, I think at its core, our focus and our hearts every day are with the healthcare providers. I think I've said before, I'm married to a doctor. My wife, Kristen, graduated from UCLA Medical School, and she's a doctor in Orange County. And just seeing on a day-to-day basis what the healthcare providers are doing is heroic. You know, she's got a friend whose family owns 50 hospitals, some in California, some in Arizona, and she runs everything. And just listening to these conversations about what doctors and nurses and, you know, first responders, it's unbelievable. They're heroic. And I think it's really brought the gravity of this situation literally home to us. But you know, in addition to that, and that's where all of our focus is, it's, we still have a job to do. You guys have a job to do as radio hosts. I've got a job to do as, you know, GM of the Lakers, and a lot of time and energy and thought is being put into that because we're proud of where we are as a team, and we want to continue to be prepared that, God willing, if health can return and we can find a way to move forward where hopefully we could finish the season.
Rob Pelinka, the Laker GM, is our guest. And Rob, with that precursor that we're all concerned first and foremost about the health and safety of all involved, let's talk a little bit of basketball because I think our fans welcome the distraction. The Lakers have some players who are on contracts that end at the end of this season. Those contracts end on June 30th. This may be a dumb question, but if the NBA resumes play and the current season goes past June 30th, do you have to re-sign your own players, or will that be determined by the NBA before it starts? How would all of that work?
You know, John and Steve, I was on a conference call this morning with Adam Silver and everybody at the league. I'll tell you, they've done such an amazing job with information dissemination and just keeping everyone up to speed with what's going on. And, of course, again, through the lens of health and safety of our fans and the players, you know, first and foremost, once you get past that, you get into the layers of thinking about those type of questions. You know, if we can finish a season, what would it look like? When will the draft be? It's historically in June. When will NBA free agency be? It's historically in July. And the way that, you know, Frank Vogel and I are approaching this is we have to be prepared for any of those scenarios. And so the work, to your point, Steve, when you said, what's your day like? We have to continue to do Zoom calls with the scouts and think through what the draft could look like because we own our first round pick. We have to start doing preparation around, hey, if free agency is here July 1st, what about this roster are we satisfied with? What areas are we looking to improve in? What players have, sort of outplayed their contracts and maybe looking for more money? So all of those questions you have to start thinking about. And then simultaneously with that, you have to say this season's not a finished product. So if we're allowed to play in games, you know, fanless games, games in a single location or games in our training center or at Staples Center. We have to think through all the operations around that and be prepared if those opportunities come, and how our team will be together still, how they'll be prepared. So there's a lot of stuff going on a daily basis that Lakers fans should know. We're thinking through every scenario and we're staying ready.
How are you staying connected to this current roster, these players right now? How connected are you, and how are those players staying connected to each other?
Well, Steve, I think, you know, one of the hallmarks of this team this year is I think we had a tremendous team chemistry. The guys just loved, you could see it, I mean, on the bus trips to the airport, on the plane rides, you know, on our bench in front of the fans, in the locker room. Just a great, great, energetic camaraderie to these guys. And that's the thing is, you know, all of us, I think, as humans right now, we're saying, how are we staying connected to our loved ones, to our friends, to our work colleagues? And we're doing it the same way. You know, there's Zoom and there's FaceTime, and my daughter showed me an app, House Party, and there's so many different ways where we have to use technology at this point to our advantage, because of course what the president and the governor of California and the mayor of LA, with all of the policies they've instituted, we've wanted to be very vigilant and very careful to follow those directives, and that's meant social distancing. So we've had to use these tools, much like the rest of society, to stay as close as we can. But the one thing you realize is, you know, all of us were built for community, and there's really no substitute to in-person sitting around a table, you know, having a meeting, looking at someone eye to eye. In fact, I was on a phone call with, you know, Jeannie and others, and we were just joking about how much we miss the round table, because that's really where we make decisions. You know, we sit, there's a round table that she has, and when it's time for big decisions to make, we sit around and we go over the pros and cons of all the decisions, and we make them. And there's no substitute for that in-person contact, for sure.
We're talking to Lakers general manager Rob Pelinka. And, Rob, I'm privileged in that I have kind of a front row seat to watch Frank Vogel work. And I think he's a great guy, but I've just been so impressed with the work ethic of Frank and his staff. And the guys that you have picked to work with him. I'm curious, what won you over? You interviewed some big-name candidates for that head coaching job, and I know it wasn't just you. I know Jeannie was involved. I think Kurt was involved. But I'm curious, Frank was obviously a great choice, and he's worked out really well. But what did it for you in the room when you were talking to him and you were picking a coach that said, that's my guy, that's the guy we want to lead the Lakers?
Well, there were many qualities, but I'll talk about a couple. One is he's an incredibly optimistic person. And I'll tell you, in times like we've had as an organization this year with some of the stuff we've had to endure, and even with this, you know, COVID-19, he's a person full of optimism and hope, and he's always positive, and I think it's contagious. So that's one that jumps out. And then two is, you know, he's got an unbelievable way with all-star and superstar-type players. And knowing that, you know, we had our sights on combining players like LeBron and Anthony Davis, it really is important to have a coach that I think can relate and take knowledge in, be a listener, be a collaborator. And he's got a really, really good ability that, you know, he had, I think, in some of the conversations with his success with the Pacers and some of the star players he had there, it was evident that he had great relationships. And it's shown. I think he's built really strong relationships with our captains. And then the rest of the staff, too. I think Jason Kidd has a real ability to build relationships. You know, Phil Handy has done a great job on championship benches. Lionel Hollins. So just the staff really works well with the roster, and I think that that's something we're really, really excited about, and we'll continue to see grow.
So there are a ton of, and I know we've all heard all of, you know, all these different plans, these different ideas for a way to resume the season. There's this idea of all the games being played in Las Vegas. There's an idea that, you know, the finals could be played as late as, you know, even December and worry about the calendar, the regular season calendar later. What do you think of some of these plans that are floating around? Do any of them resonate with you?
Yeah, Steve, great question. And right now, of course, this virus, it's so much bigger than basketball and plans. But I think to, you know, John's point, we all love to think about sports. I alluded, I think, yesterday to, you know, a quote that I've had on my desk from, you know, Nelson Mandela that talks about, you know, the unique ability of sports to bring hope where there's despair. And I think what you guys do, your jobs, the reading the box scores, going online, hearing about trade, I mean, all that stuff is so interesting and brings hope and joy. And so I think being able to talk about those things, we don't want to lose sight of the bigger picture, but to bring hope, we'll talk about paths forward. And I think, you know, thankfully, and again, being married to a doctor, you hear some of this stuff that it looks like the numbers and the extreme measures that the country and the world is taking is hopefully, you know, smoothing out this curve or flattening this curve. And I think if you listen to the governments, you hope that there's a time where we feel like that's been done successfully enough where you can start to entertain sports coming back. And when it does, I think Dr. Fauci made this point the other day, this virus isn't going to just disappear and go away. So at some point it's going to be, what are the government officials? What is Adam Silver and the league telling us in terms of for sports to come back? How do we function with this virus, since it's not going to go away, and how do we mitigate the risk to as low as possible? So I think when you start hearing of these different examples, like a remote site location or playing games at training centers without fans, I think whatever proposal eventually comes forward that brings that risk as low as possible is probably the one that's going to make the most sense. And I do think at the same time that, you know, right now this is a physical illness battle, but sports provides so much, you know, mental healing that we do have to at some point start to think about making sure this doesn't get into a place where it becomes a mental health battle. And so I think sports is just going to be a huge part of the overall healing on this journey we're all on in humanity right now.
Amen. I hope so. Rob, last thing for me, I actually wrote Rob a note about this off the air, but you helped me tremendously get through this Kobe Bryant tragedy, Kobe and Gigi, and I was floored by your composure after they died. And you said something when you first issued a statement, and you said, all of us touched by them will now try to become torch carriers of their legacies. And for whatever reason, that stuck with me. Whenever I get sad, I tell a Kobe story, something that he did or that I think will make people smile. I'm curious, you have to think about him every day. When you do, what do you think of the most?
The friendship. You know, I think anyone that encountered Kobe and Gigi, whether that was as a friend or watching him at a basketball game or interacting with one of them in person, for those so blessed to have had that, we all have, because of that, some sort of, you know, flame in us that will stay alive and that will carry forward. I think that's what was meant by the quote. I think in a time like this, where there's a lot of darkness in the world, he was the strongest of friends you could have, because any obstacle that was put in front of him and or in front of a friend, he would look at and say, okay, here's how we're going to overcome that, and here's how we're going to make this obstacle something that ultimately leads to a greater good. And that was just his mentality. And as a friend, he was so incredibly good at that. And even in this time, he continues to inspire, you know, ways around this current obstacle, because so many of the messages and so many of the things he had to say are still imprinted in you and in your mind. And so, but that's the thing that I think of the most, is just, you know, how amazing he was to ride through hard times with.
So, last thing, for me, Rob, everybody in the world has been talking about the show Tiger King. We talked to Frank Vogel about it. We've talked to Stan Kasten about it last week. Have you seen Tiger King, and what do you think?
You know what? I hate to disappoint. I'm aware of it. And
oh, I've never been prouder of you.
I need to watch it, but I have not. Our family has been on a let's go back into the deep, deep archive movie kick. Our kids are 12 and 10, so, you know, it limits the universe a little bit. But we started with going back into, like, old school comedies, and I'm from Chicago, so it was, like, Chris Farley and Tommy Boy and, you know, Vince Vaughn and Dodgeball. So kids were rolling over some of the old school. We watched Coming to America. That was the barbershop scenes are some of the best ever.
Yep.
And then we went into kind of like this historical epic. How do we, since kids are not going to school every day, how do we teach history? So it led to the whole Gladiator, Roman Empire, you know, William Wallace, Braveheart, thing. And then recently it's been more of like the heartwarming sort of tearjerkers, Will Smith and Pursuit of Happiness. We watched a great Michael B. Jordan movie, Just Mercy. He was in and gave a Lakers talk, just a phenomenal person. So we've been more in the old, in the movie archive than the Netflix. So sorry, I'm not a Tiger King kind of yet.
Rob, you don't know how many points you just scored. Yeah, Frank Vogel said he'll never get those 7 hours back. You are the smartest person we've talked to.
It sounds like your kids are getting a great movie education.
That sounds great. Hey, Rob, will you do us a favor? Please say thank you to your wife and to, you know, to all the medical professionals out there. I know we can't thank them enough, but for those people who are doctors and for those people who are helping on the front lines, I mean, we all get to work in the toy store of life and sports, and we take our job seriously, but they're doing the work that we'll never be able to repay them for. So, please give our thanks to your wife and her friends and extend our heartfelt thanks to everybody that's helping out.
I will. And John and Steve, you know, good health and safety to you and your family. And really to all the Lakers fans that are listening, there's nothing that is missed more, you know, from basketball than being in Staples Center. Our fans this season, with the success we had, just, it felt like the roof was going to come off the building so many times. So, can't wait to get back to that energy, and it comes from our fans. So thinking of everybody, praying for everybody, and thank you guys for the time to be able to jump on and talk a little hoops.
Yep.
Thanks,
absolutely.
Rob. Be safe.
Thank you, Rob.
See you guys.
All right. Boy, he's so fun to talk to.
He is.
He's just got so much perspective on so many different things. And I'm so proud that he didn't watch Tiger King.
I'm so disappointed he didn't watch Tiger King.
Speaking of movies, coming up at the bottom of the hour is Ron Shelton, who has written and directed the best sports movies there are. White Men Can't Jump, Bull Durham, Tin Cup. Those all came from the mind of Ron Shelton, and he's going to join us in 10 minutes.
And in the meantime, Lindsay, do you have a couple of voicemails you can play when we get back?
Sure do.
All right, cool. That's coming up for you, too. 5 o'clock Fast Track is on the way. Also, Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN. All right, we got some breaking news.
The Los Angeles
Rams have just traded Brandon Cooks to the Houston Texans for a second-round draft pick.
It's Cooks and a fourth-rounder to Houston for a second-rounder.
And this is, I think, a good deal. Depends how much money they got to pay. Brandon Cooks, last year, those couple of concussions he had, there was some concern that the concussion thing was going to be an ongoing issue for him. second round draft pick and clearing some cap space is a good move, I think. It still leaves them at the wide receiver spot with Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp. And Josh Reynolds had a really good year last year. Maybe he factors into the wide receiver core, and an additional second round pick in a draft that is filled with really good impact wide receivers. So the Rams trading Brandon Cooks to the Houston Texans.
The Texans are going to absorb his contract, which has 4 years, $51 million left on it. So
they're Rams, taking the entire contract?
Yeah. So the Rams are going to save roughly $13 million in cap space, between $12 and $13 million in cap space each season. So that makes sense for both teams, because Houston needed a wide receiver because they traded DeAndre Hopkins, and Brandon Cooks has worked with Bill O'Brien before. He worked with Josh McDaniels at New England, and McDaniels and O'Brien are tight. So that
gives the rooms. That means between the Gurley trade and the Cooks trade, they've created about $15 million in cap space to use this year, along with adding a second-round pick. So they now have 2 seconds, a third, a fourth, a fifth, and a sixth.
Right. All right, Lindsay, what do you got in the voicemail department?
All right, we can start with Joe in Silver Lake. You got that one, Funch?
Joe in Silver Lake.
Mason, I just want you to recall that when you guys had...
Wait. You got to start that over.
Okay.
Hey, y'all, Joe in Silver Lake. Mason, I just want you to recall that when you guys had... That's right. I forget his name.
He's listening to the show. You can hear the show in the background.
Hey, Lindsay, this is Joe in Silver Lake. You know, you can use my last call where I forgot the guy's name as a different kind of a senior moment. when y'all had Larry King on,
yep.
He said, thanks, fellas, Mason's favorite word to dislike, fellas, right? That came directly out of the mouth of Larry King, who everybody over there loves as the master, right?
Yep.
All right, Mason, remember that. Peace, okay. Y'all. Stay safe.
Yeah. Larry King is 82 years old. He knows the word fellas. It's from his boyhood.
No, fellas is a perfectly legitimate word. Feel free to work it into your vocabulary.
Sadly, it will never go away. Morales just taunts me with it.
Yeah, he should. There's nothing wrong with that word. That word's fine.
I love you, and you were talking to, I can't think of his name. Click.
That's a different kind of senior moment. That is a good line.
That's
and
a
I love
senior
how he, like,
shout out.
He had to call back to be like, you can use that in my call.
Well, you forget that once you start leaving a message, we can use anything we want.
Right. It's great. Some of these are really good. There's another one we could play. Bruce. He has a message for Sliwa.
Okay.
Hi, this message is for Sliwa. Please tell him to stop calling Michael Thompson MT. Nobody calls him MT. Nobody has ever called him MT. His name is Michael or Mr. Thompson. Every time I hear him call him MT on the Lakers pregame show, it drives me nuts. I change the channel. No more MT. Thank you.
Call him MT constantly.
And that seems
pregame.
Like a very strong reaction to someone calling him MT. I mean,
well, you
change
call him
the
Michael.
Channel.
I call him
I do.
Michael. Who
well,
calls
MT,
him MT?
MT makes no sense to me because it oftentimes I would be talking to him and Trudell, and they're both MTs.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, Sliwa. You know. We're going to bring this up with Sliwa. Hold that voicemail for him tonight. We'll play it before sunset.
Mason in Ireland, Ron Shelton. The great sports film writer-director coming up next on 710 ESPN.
All right, ESPN LA, Mason and Ireland show. What is going on? It is a quarantine Thursday. Great show so far with Rob Pelinka of the Lakers and Tom Penn of the LAFC. And it's going to get even better because joining us right now is Arguably, actually, I don't think it's arguable, the greatest director of sports movies in movie history, Ron Shelton, is on the line. Hey, Ron, how are you, man?
Well, you know, I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club.
There you go.
There's somebody who's heard the speech. You know, Ron, I was thinking about something. You wrote and directed my favorite baseball movie, Bull Durham, my favorite basketball movie, White Men Can't Jump, and my favorite golf movie, Tin Cup. So here's what I was wondering. If you put a degree of difficulty on those movies, like in terms of which one was the hardest one to make, the toughest to execute, which one was it? Tin Cup, Bull Durham, or White Men Can't Jump?
Well, Bull Durham, we just didn't have enough money. We're shooting in the middle of winter, and it was freezing. But the cast and the baseball and the magic was there. Tin Cup was maybe the hardest because golf is hard to make dramatic.
Right.
You know, it's a golf tournament if you've ever been to one, and I love to play golf and go to live tournaments. It's, you know, 150 acres with 150 guys doing exactly the same thing, and you don't, and the crowds, and you can't see anything, and there's no drama unless you go home and watch it on TV, and they sort it out for you. So golf was the trickiest one just to make exciting.
So I worked in minor league baseball for a few years. I worked for the Toledo Mud Hens in the International League.
I played there.
Did you?
I played for the Red Wings against the Mud Hens.
The Rochester Red Wings. How about that? So tell me about capturing what minor league baseball is all about.
Well, it's glorious on one hand, and it's the least glamorous thing you can imagine on the other. You know, every player is the all-star of some college, league, team, state, and now everybody's fighting for their lives. And when I played back, was a while ago, but you got $3 a day meal money in A-ball, $5 a day meal money in AA, and $7.50 in AAA. So throwing a couple of beers, you know, you can't get a taxi cab back to the hotel. So, and the conditions were terrible, and everybody's trying to get each other's job, and it was great, all at the same time.
When did you play for Rochester? When were you in AAA?
70, 71, 70 part of the year, 71 the whole year. That's when they had what's called one of the greatest minor league teams of all time. It was Baylor and Gritch and on going, on and on and on. And we won the International League and the playoffs, and then we beat the Denver Bears in the what they call the Junior World Series back in those days. And, I've been to Toledo many times. Lucas County, whatever it's called.
Lucas County Stadium. Did you guys play at Silver Stadium in Rochester?
Yep, Silver Stadium.
Yeah,
yep.
Boy, they were all dives, weren't they?
Yeah. I love Silver Stadium, though. I lived in a boarding house around the corner. We'd go to the Seneca Lanes bar at night. I mean, it was great and glamorous. And I got inducted into the Red Wing Hall of Fame 2 summers ago, so I was very happy.
Good for you.
Awesome. That's great.
Good for you.
Man.
We're talking to the great Ron Shelton, who has written and directed all of your favorite sports movies. And I want to ask you a question, Ron, about casting. You had to find somebody who could play a pitcher in Bull Durham, and you cast Tim Robbins. You had to find a couple of guys who could play basketball for White Men Can't Jump, and you found Woody Harrelson and Wesley Snipes. When you're casting, do you take the attitude, okay, I need an actor first who can play the part, and I'll teach them the sport, or do they have to have some semblance of athleticism before you cast them?
They have to have some athletic ability because you can't teach that. You can't. And, you know, Wesley was not a great basketball player, but he's a phenomenal athlete. And you could teach him anything. I mean, he's a martial arts guy. He'd played various sports. He just hadn't played basketball. And you could teach him. And we showed him old Nate Archibald tapes and said, you have to do all that on camera for real. And so he could dribble between his legs and behind his back and all that stuff. He could palm up. He's not that tall, but he could get about a foot above the rim. So, you know, that you can't teach. I love Woody. He's a natural basketball player, but he's not the world's greatest athlete. But you could drop him into any game in the world and he would hold his own. Foster's a real athlete.
So, for me, your most underrated movie is The Best of Times with Robin Williams. I love it because it's a movie that at its heart is about, it's almost like that Bill Buckner story. It's a redemption story after after having made a big mistake in a game. How was it working with Robin Williams on that project?
It was the only time I worked with him, and it's kind of what you thought. He's on 24 hours a day. So in between takes, he'd be entertaining the caterer and the the teamster, and you know the guy that's drawing cables. He'd have to get a laugh. He just had to be entertaining you. And Kurt Russell, the great American actor, is about as calm as grounded as Robin, the late great Robin, was wired. So it was a perfect combo.
Ron, somebody told me a story that you used to play pickup basketball at the Hollywood Y, where I used to play pickup occasionally. And is it true that you were playing in games with guys that had no idea who you were, and then you eventually ended up using them in the movie?
Yep. They didn't know. But I made a bunch of movies, and the arguments were so funny that I said, I got to write a movie about streetball. And then we had a casting call, and we posted in the Hollywood Y. So they all showed up, and they walked in and said, what are you doing here? I says, what do you mean, what are you doing? I'm writing, directing, and producing this thing. You want a job? Shut up and give me your lines. So I put them all in the movie.
For my money, the best piece of writing that I just one of the great, great speeches, monologues of all time is the beginning of Bull Durham and the Susan Sarandon Church of Baseball speech. How long did it take to write that and to really nail that?
A minute. I don't know. 5 minutes.
Really?
I
came right out.
I was driving around in the minor leagues of North Carolina trying to figure out, could you make a movie about baseball? And because baseball had become big business and baseball players were making a lot of money that they deserved, and baseball players, as you know, used to be very accessible, they'd become very inaccessible. You know, you need to talk to their publicist and three lawyers to get an interview or a picture.
Sure.
Well, it used to be different. And I wondered if the minor leagues had been ruined, too. So I drove all around the Carolinas, one league I missed somehow, and it was exactly the same. Nothing had changed, except now you got like $8 a day mail money. And that's where I realized there's a movie to be made. I drove on one of those drives. Now, I wanted to drive to Asheville, the oldest wooden ballpark in America. Cobb and Ruth played there. It's still there. And I said, I got to see this thing. So I had a little dictaphone with me. I used to write on the little, like a dictaphone, you know, miniature recorder thing. And I said, I believe in the Church of Baseball. I've worshipped all the major religions and most of the minor ones. I did like the first four lines of that. And then I put it down. And about 10 minutes later, I picked up. By the time I got to Asheville, I'd written the whole speech. And when I got back to L.A., I played it, and I typed it up, and I started writing the script without an outline. That's honestly how it happened.
Wow. No kidding. Well, that's fascinating.
So the whole movie came from that speech.
Yeah. Most scripts don't happen that way, but that one did. Yeah.
We're talking to the great Ron Shelton, who has done most great sports movies that exist today. Ron, you've had, in all these movies, you often use real athletes or real-life people to play roles in your movies. In Tin Cup, you used a whole bunch of pro golfers. You had Peter Jacobson and Johnny Miller and Gary McCord, and I know Marcus Johnson and Nigel McGill played characters for you in White Man Can't Jump. Of all those, I assume you had baseball players in Bull Durham. Of all those guys, who's been the best athlete that you know, you threw them in the movie because you knew they were athletic and they turned out to be a decent actor?
Oh, that's a good question. I haven't rated them, but athletes are hams. You know, they like, every athlete thinks they're a good actor, and every actor thinks they're a good athlete, and that's provably wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But athletes are used to cameras, and so they tend to be kind of relaxed and easy to direct because you can say, do it again, do it again, do it again. They're used to doing it again. When you can say that was terrible and they don't get their feelings hurt. You know, I mean, athletes have been yelled at by coaches since they were six. So, and they're used to entertaining themselves too. So I really like working with them. You know, Craig Stadler was in 10 Cup too, and he's a ham. And
sure.
So I, you know, I don't have a favorite, but Marcus Johnson, of course, who's now a wonderful broadcaster, he was, I always thought he was kind of shy and everything, but he just took off in that part and went to the glove box to get a knife to, you know.
He brought his gun back. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was great in that. You know, I wanted to ask you about Don Johnson. He does such a good job in Tin Cup of playing the jerk golfer, who we all know, anybody who's ever covered golf, Ron, knows that those guys exist. They're guys that just won't give anybody the time of day, that take themselves really seriously.
Yep.
What was Johnson like to work with? Was he like that off camera too, or did he just nail the part, or what? How did that all evolve?
Well, I couldn't figure out how to cast that part. I had Kevin, who's playing the unknown golfer who's kind of screwed up his career because he's self-destructive, and then I needed the star golfer, who everybody knows, and I couldn't hire an unknown golfer to play a star and the star to play the unknown. It would have just been skewed. So I needed a named golfer. And Don's agent suggested him, and he flew over to Arizona, and we were about to shoot, and he auditioned for me. And he was charming and all of that, and then he left the room, and I thought, he's pretty good. I wonder if he has the mean streak. And I went on, he was yelling at somebody. I teased him. I said, okay, that's it. Give him the part. Give him the part. He was convinced. And then he charged me for his plane to come over there. So, you know,
that's the guy.
So, Ron, I love movies. I mean, I love movies from the time I'm a little kid. I went on to become a movie theater owner. I'm not in the business now, but for a long time, for 25 years, I owned movie theaters. With this crisis going on right now, how afraid are you for the movie business?
Well, the movie business as we know it is dead. That is, theaters, they only really exist for mega budgeted movies now. I hate to say it because I like the big theaters. And the streaming business is the future, and the future's now. Screens are bigger and bigger at home, and you know, and you watch first-run movies, and I think that's what it's going to be. And I hate to say it, but I think I'm lying if I didn't say it. What's happening now is nobody's even allowed to go to movie theaters, and so they're staying home and watching even more streaming movies.
Right.
And,
do you think movie theaters will be around in 20 years?
I think they will. The way, you know, there's still opera houses, and but unfortunately, they're just for big event, gigantic $300 million movies where it's kind of a spectacle.
Ron, last thing, is there a sports movie out there that hasn't been done that either you would like to do or like to see somebody else do? You got a script sitting in a drawer that you're itching to get done?
About seven of them.
You know, no kid.
Want to make me a deal with one of your own movie theaters?
No. Are you allowed to say what, or would that give away the idea?
No, I don't want to say because, you know, a couple of them are very active, and they've kind of gone on hold because of the whole health crisis. But, no, there's a lot of great sports. You know, you guys are in the sports business because it's really not about the great plays, as I've said many times. It's about all the things that happen between the great plays.
Yep.
Or you get to know the characters, you get to know the movies, you know, the athletes, and their lives are, sometimes they're thin and sometimes they're rich and complicated, and the fan knows no idea what's going on behind the scenes. And there's drama everywhere. There'll always be sports movies. They're just tough sells because baseball doesn't travel, and we don't watch soccer. I mean, we don't. And movies. Basketball is now international. Golf is becoming international. But they're very tough to get an international market on.
Well, listen, Ron, it's fun to get you on. We appreciate it. We're huge fans, obviously. Your movies are part of sports culture history. We've all seen, given what we do, we've all seen them, and we've seen them multiple times, and it's fun to talk about them with you.
Well, I hope to give you some more and give us more chance to talk on the phone.
All right, cool. Ron, thanks for doing this.
Thanks,
have a
Ron.
Great day. Stay safe.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
All right. But that was fun, huh?
That's great. Yeah, those movies are... I mean, if you've never seen those movies, if you've never seen Tin Cup, if you've never seen
White Man Can't Jump... out of people that you don't see coming. Like, Cheech Marin is great as the caddy.
Yeah, fantastic.
In Tin Cup. In Bull Durham... The first baseman, he's passed away, but the first baseman was a guy named Danny Gans, who for years had the number one show in Vegas. He was like a variety show guy.
He was an impressionist.
Right. That was, you know, absolutely. In White Men Can't Jump, he had all these, like, small parts. Like, Rosie Perez had a breakout part in that.
Yep.
But, by the way, do you know one of the people who competes against Rosie Perez in Jeopardy? In White Men Can't Jump, and this guy found his way into a lot of Ron's movies, was Alan Malamud, the page.
Oh, yeah, the LA columnist. Times sports writer, yeah.
Right, yeah, he was in Blue Chips, he was in White Men Can't Jump, he was
actually,
in
King I think
Cup.
That was the thing. I think he was in all of Ron's movies while he was alive.
Right, and so, but I'm thinking back to Kadeem Hardison, was on A Different World, had as Wesley Snipes. He was the guy saying, "We're going to Sizzler. We're going to Sizzler." You know, had a great role, and he there's so many like small parts that are great. I love that story about Don Johnson, that he goes outside and Don's yelling at someone. So he goes, "That's the guy."
You know? What's the bit with Don Johnson in the movie where he kisses babies? No, he hates
old people and dogs. I heard that was a story about a real golfer on the PGA Tour, and they just stole it and put it in the movie.
Oh, that is so funny.
And he goes and he walks out of an interview and yells at two old people and goes, "Ugly dog."
All right. We got 5 o'clock Fast Track coming up. I think we got a little segment before that.
We're going straight to Fast Track.
Oh, we're going straight to Fast Track?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. We will go straight to 5 o'clock Fast Track coming up next. That's a hell of a fun couple of hours of radio. Thanks to Tom Penn and Rob Palenka and Ron Shelton. That was really
good job,
really
Lindsay.
Good. Good job, Lindsay. All right, 5 o'clock Fast Track coming up next. Mason and Ireland, 710 ESPN.